Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
Deception, lies, fakery, fraudulence, and forgery. This is what Intelligent Speech 2025 will be bringing you.
We are delighted to announce three outstanding keynote speakers. We have Joe Hedwig Tuwise from the awesome Fake History Hunter Twitter feed and author of Fake History. We also have Otto English, author of another Fake History and Fake Heroes, and presenter of the Utter Bollocks podcast.
And finally, we have podcasting legend and Intelligent Speech stalwart, Wesley Livesey, host of the History of the Great War and the History of the Second World War podcasts.
Intelligent Speech 2025. Deception will be taking place on the 8th of February, 2025. Go to intelligentspeechonline.com to find out more.
Use my code ZAR for a 10% discount. That is ZAR, T-S-A-R.
In this perias operi, upro dau pro bindeba. Zarma valiana teli.
Gamarjoba, and welcome to the History of Sacagawea, Georgia. I'm your host, Roberto, and this is episode 40, The Armistice. In this episode, we will finish going through Procopius's The Wars of Justinian, and see how the Byzantines and Sassanids finally make an armistice in Lazica. Or do they? But first, we have some new Patreon members. Thank you to my new Eristavi, Konstantine Megrelishvili, and Ashley Fisher. It's so wonderful that you guys are joining. I want to thank my other Patreon members, who have been amazing as always with their continued support. This show could not run without you. I want to give a shout out to all of you now. Thanks to Audrey Nissen, Andrew Schneider, Mitchell Dutt, Eric Nicholson from Ranking 76, Gerard Eliasser, Holly Koontz from Quest Friends, Quinn Campagna from Noblesse Oblige, Manny Robertson, our amazing artist, and David Montgomery from The Siecle. You are all amazing, and I value each and every one of you. Now, let's get into today's episode. Last time we were in Lazica, the Persian general Mir Midoe established himself in Kutaisi, and used his position in the central point to hinder Byzantine attempts to provision their strongholds around the area. While Mir Midoe terrorized the Lazoi and Roman forces, Our friend Yezgushnasp was finalizing a series of protracted peace debates with the Byzantines back in Constantinople regarding their war in Lazica. As the ambassador to the King of Kings Hosro, Yezgushnasp put his negotiation skills to the test, as well as his own travel planning, as he made his way back and forth from Ctesiphon to Constantinople, ensuring that the messages of the Roman Emperor and the Persian Shahanshah were heard. Mutual agreement on many of the peace terms were easy to agree on, but the point of contention between Byzantium and Persia remained on the control of Lazica. Yezgushnasp finally managed to broker an agreement between the two empires, leading to a 5-year truce in which the Romans would pay 20 centenaria of gold up front for the deal, along with an additional 6 centenaria of gold to make up for the 18 months that had elapsed between the expiration of the last truce and the time that negotiations for the current truce had commenced. For those of you who were as confused as me, a single centenaria is around 100 pounds of gold. So the Romans agreed to give the Persians 2,600 pounds of gold. That's quite a lot. When asking for the payment, Yezgushnasp asked that the Romans pay the 20 centenaria of gold right then and there, just so they could get it out of the way. However, if that was too much for them, Hosro would also prefer that the Romans pay him in increments of 4 centenaria of gold a year, so that they could collect their tax revenue much more easily and not spend as much up front and be assured that while they paid, Hosro would not violate the armistice. The Romans guffawed at the thought and paid the entire amount of gold up front. They complained that even spreading out the payments over time gave the appearance of paying tribute to the Persians and would be humiliating and shameful to them as an empire. So, that was an absolute no from them. I really like that this illusion of choice was probably Hosro trying to get under the Roman skin with this offer of split payments. If Justinian had agreed to it, it would have definitely given Hosro a leg up in future negotiations. But he played his cards well to just get the money ahead of time in case the Romans decided to break the truce themselves. Yezgushnasp then received another missive from Hosro, and that was to free someone from the Byzantine prisons named Bersabos. Bersabos was a noble and a close friend of Hosro, who happened to have been captured during a battle in Armenia and was sent to Justinian as a high-ranking prisoner. He was kept in Constantinople under strict guard. Hosro was willing to offer a large payment for the return of Bersabos. Yezgushnasp had a better idea and offered Justinian a deal. If Bersabos was freed, he would persuade Hosro to remove the Persian armies from Lazica. This is what pushed forward the armistice between Persia and Constantinople in late 551. The armistice Justinian made with Yezgushnasp upset the nobility, leading to the main objectors to state that the truce was made when Lazica was under the height of Persian control, and that it would allow the Persians to entrench themselves into Lazica. This in turn would increase the difficulty for future Roman reconquest, and allow the Persians ease of access to Constantinople through the Black Sea. To add further insult to injury, the Romans were essentially paying tribute to the Persians by giving them nearly 2,600 pounds of gold, making it seem they had all but given up on Lazica. Yezgushnasp temporarily found himself as the richest Persian due to all the gold he was carrying for Hosro, and made his way back to Persia. As an added bonus for his work, Justinian had gifted the Persian ambassador huge sums of gold. Yezgushnasp had so ingratiated himself to the emperor that he and his followers had free rein around Constantinople, allowing him to do as he pleased, which meant he could go around the city without a guard. What a man. He returned to Ctesiphon in the winter of 552 and gave Hosro the Roman gold and the terms of the armistice. Hosro confirmed it without hesitation, but made note that he was unwilling to withdraw from Lazica. More on this later.
Hello and bonjour. My name is Josh Zucker, and I want to take you on a journey through some of the most exciting events of the late Middle Ages. Valois-Burgundy was one of the medieval world's greatest what-ifs, Its dukes inherited, conquered, and politicked their way into forging a state between the German Empire and the Kingdom of France that rivaled them both. From the Hundred Years' War to the Holy Roman Empire, from urban workers to Joan of Arc, and from gallant knights to gunpowder weapons, the Grand Dukes of the West had a part to play in almost all of Western Europe's biggest developments in the 14th and 15th centuries. If you want to learn more about the glamorous rise and dramatic fall of the Dukes of Burgundy, please join me for Grand Dukes of the West, A History of Valois Burgundy.
Hello, everybody. This is Trevor Cully, host of the History of Persia podcast. From about 550 to 330 BC, most of the Middle East was ruled by the Achaemenid Persians. The Achaemenids pioneered the concept of a truly multinational empire, which incorporated people from as far away as India and Greece for over 200 years. The story of Persia discusses the fall of ancient civilizations, the origins of endurance racing, 300 Spartans, the March of the 10,000, and at least one evil priest who replaced and impersonated the king, all before falling with the dramatic close at Alexander the Great's conquests. If that story and the story of the cultures that surround it sound interesting to you, check out The History of Persia at historyofpersiapodcast.com or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
With Gisgushnas negotiations now finished and him settling in Persia for the winter, we roll back our clock and sail across the Black Sea to Lazica, where we can see that the Lazoi were not having the best of times. The Romans, as per usual, were treating the natives of the area like absolute trash, leading the Lazoi opinions of the Romans to drop substantially and lead them to thinking that Persian control wouldn't be so bad anymore. This was not because the Lazoi tribe supported the Persians, but more so because the Roman officers that they were working with were jerks, and they wanted a change of pace in leadership. To me, this shows the fickleness of the Lazoi tribe, especially when dealing with people they don't like. The problem of being a border state between two empires is that they can always pick and choose who they want to side with, hence why we're in this long and protracted war. Well, Mirmirwe returns to our narrative after relaxing in Kutaisi, and we see him meeting with a noble from the Lazoi tribe named Theophobios, or the God-fearer. What a cool name. This meeting was to discuss how to put the fort of Uthemerios into Persian hands. Mirmirwe spoke to Theophobios and promised him the world. All he would need was the fortress of Uthemerios, and his assistance to the Persians would lead him to getting fame, power, and wealth beyond his wildest dreams. Before they hung him from the gallows, these were the final words he said. Wait, that's from One Piece. He was not hung, but Mirmirwis did promise him all that and the friendship of Khosrow. Theophobius gobbled this all up and agreed with Mirmirwis' deal. In the meantime, communications between the Romans and the Lazoi had all but disappeared. Due to Lazoi opinions towards the Romans, they had separated into different strongholds around the area. A small group of Romans had taken Nokalakevi by the Phasis River and were sheltered amongst some other strongholds. Gubaz II had decided to remain with his Lazoi troops up in the mountains where he could easily defend against any Persian attacks. This separation between the two armies broke down communication and was also hindered due to Mirmirwe's control of Kutaisi, which allowed him to disrupt any flow of communication between the two groups, thanks to its placement on the river. Thanks to these instances, Theophobius was able to keep his promise relatively easily to Mirmirwe and deceive anyone that he spoke to. Theophobius entered the fortress of Uthemerios and told the Lazai and Roman guards that their reinforcements had perished in battle against Mirmirwe. He further emphasized that King Gubaz's dream for removing Persian influence from Lazica was all but done for, and that the Persians now controlled the lands around them. All hope was lost for freedom now that Lazica was under Persian control. The troops of Uthemerios were astonished and began to panic at Theophobius' news. The Lazai noble continued weaving his lie expertly. He pointed out that Mirmerdwe had been the one to conquer the Romans in the field, and he now had over 70,000 Persian troops under his control, and even more in auxiliary forces. The eyes of the Romans grew in fear, especially as Theophobius mentioned that the King of Kings, Hosro, had entered Lazica and personally had an immeasurable amount of men to join the forces with Mirmerdwe. Not even all of Lazica could take on the Persian army now. Theophobius must have been a masterful storyteller, because the guards of Uthimerios were reduced to a state of terror and helplessness, leading them to cower in the corner. They begged Theophobius to assist them in turning this situation into one in which they would survive. Theophobius took on his air of nobility, stuck his nose into the air, and mentioned that he would bring Hosro pledges of their safety, on one condition, that being that they surrender the fortress over to the Persians. The men immediately agreed, and Theophobius returned to Mirmerdwe to explain his success in conquering the fortress through mere speech alone. This man must have been a level 20 bard with super maxed out charisma. With Uthimerios now promised to him, Mirmerdwe selected his most notable men to join him so that they could arrange safe passage of the guards and transfer control of the fortress to him. With that, Uthimerios was now under Persian control and led to the capture of the Scibnia and Suania forts, as well as the territory from Mujeres up to Iberia, essentially removing this possession from the Romans and King Gubaz II. The Lazi and Roman armies were now trapped in their mountain peaks and strongholds, unable to withstand the Persians at all. With that, winter came, and snow began to fall onto Lazica. Mirmerdwe ordered a wooden wall built around Kutaisi, and left a force of 3,000 soldiers to man it, and also restored the fortress of Sarapanis, which was at the end of Lazi territory near the Iberian border. News then came that the Romans and Lazoi had made camp at the mouth of the Phasis River, so he went forth to attack. King Gubaz II learned of Mirmerdwe's march and refused to meet the Persians in battle, pushing him to tactically retreat to save the lives of the Lazi troops, as well as his own. Gubaz went back up the mountain, where he spent the winter with his wife and children, dealing with the harsh coldness of the mountain as best as he could. He remained hopeful of the future because he knew Byzantium would prevail and he would be successful in kicking the Persians out of Lazica, so he and his men became consoled in that fact as they waited the following spring when the snow in the mountain paths would melt and a campaign season would begin anew. While the Lazoi army suffered with the cold mountain peaks, Mirmerdwe happily played the Sims and built as many houses as he could throughout Mujeres, and established supply reservoirs throughout the land to better help him take control of the territory. Using these supply reservoirs, Mirmerdwe appealed to many Lazoi deserters due to him having food and supplies for winter, and he sent them off to other Lazoi villages to push them to support the Persian forces. His control of the area made him the essential lord of Lazica. With his newfound control, Mirmerdwe penned a letter to King Gubaz II, saying, quote,
"There are two things that regulate the lives of men, power and wisdom. Those who are more powerful than their neighbors live according to their own desire and also lead where they wish those who are less powerful than themselves, while the others, although enslaved to the strong because of their weakness, can still remedy their impotence by wisdom and by courting the powerful with flattery, are still able to live with their own possessions, enjoying by means of flattery everything of which they are deprived by weakness. This is the case not only for some nations, it being different for others, but one can say that this is innate to human experience in every part of the inhabited world, like any other natural characteristic. My dear Gubozes, if you think you are going to defeat the Persians in the war, then neither hesitate nor let anything stand in your way. You will find us in any part of Lazica you may choose, ready to meet your attack and prepared in battle array to fight for this land with all our might, so that in waging a decisive battle, you have the opportunity to show your valor against us. If, however, even you realize that you are unable to pit yourself against the might of the Persians, then, good sir, you should opt for the second alternative and know yourself. Bow down before your master Chosroes as king and victor and lord. Beg that he be merciful to you in spite of your acts, in order that you may be able henceforth to escape the evils that afflict you. For I personally promise that King Chosroes will be merciful to you and will give pledges, furnishing you as hostages, sons of the notable lords of Persia, so that you will have safety. your kingdom, and everything else in security for all time. But if you want neither of these alternatives, then at least go off to some other land and allow the Lazoi, who have been reduced to wretchedness by your foolishness, to breathe again and recover from the difficulties that press upon them. Do not wish to inflict upon them this unending destruction, being moved by a deceptive hope, by which I mean assistance from the Romans, for they will never be able to defend you, just as they have not been able up to the present day.
End quote. The letter from Mirdamirdawed did nothing to persuade King Gubaz into surrendering to the Persians, as he knew the Romans would be his savior. Sure, they were treating his men badly, but he remembered how the Persians forced him to convert to Zoroastrianism, and worse, moved them from their homes. And worse, kicked them out of Lazica. He had come to terms with all the consequences of spending winter on a mountain, and knew that there would be light at the end of the tunnel. Our timelines converge in the winter of 552, and we once again see Yazgushnas conversing with Hosro. Hosro let his ambassador know that he would be unable to relinquish Lazica, and had actually just used the Roman gold he received to hire a new horde of Sabiroe Huns, which he had sent to immediately reinforce Mirdamirdawe, giving his general as much control over the troops as possible to get the job done. Oh, and there was a whole army of elephants sent his way too. With his newfound reinforcements, Mirdamirdawe left Mujeresis and besieged the remaining strongholds of Lazica. He faced almost no resistance from the Romans, until he came into contact with a select group of troops under the guidance of General Martinos, who had fortified themselves in a strong position at the mouth of the Phasis River. King Gubaz came down from the mountain to reinforce Martinos. However, the Romans were not attacked immediately, since Mirdamirdawe had become distracted by a new target. And who was that target? Well, news arrived to Mirdamirdawe that the sister of King Gubaz II had remained entrenched in the fortress, and the Persian general decided that it would let him gain an upper hand in negotiations with the Lazai king if he had a high-value hostage. So, Mirdamirdawe sent his Huns to attack the fortress, but the guards of the fortress offered a heavy resistance and repulsed the Huns. This led the Huns to seek a fight against the Abazgoi troops of the Romans. However, the Romans kept guard of the pass at Zibile and made sure that the way was blocked for them. Mirdamirdawe's desire to capture King Gubaz's sister proved to be his folly, and he no longer had a way to dislodge the Romans out of the area by force, and he pushed forward to Nokalakevi to begin his siege of the city. However, he had no success in doing so and had to retreat. The Romans took it upon themselves and followed Mirdamirdawe and his troops into a dangerous pass and slaughtered them. Among those slain on the battlefield was the leader of the Sabiroi Huns. It took most of the day for their fighting to end, and the Persians finally managed to push the Romans away from them, and they returned to Kutaisi to lick their wounds. And with that, we end Procopius' account of the Lazic War and move on to Agathis' histories. To connect with us, feel free to find us on social media under @history_Georgia or on Facebook at The History of Sacramento, Georgia. Our intro music is Bindi Speria Sopeli by Zadashe. They will be touring the U.S. in September 2024, so keep a lookout for them. That is in this month. It's already happening. I'm going to go see them. They're going to be amazing. To help this podcast continue, please feel free to subscribe to our Patreon or donate via Ko-fi or PayPal. The links are in the episode description. If you would prefer donating something a bit more tangible, we also have an Amazon wishlist for you to peruse. But the best way to help us is via a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast host, as it goes a long way with getting the word out about the show and helping us reach new people to learn about Georgia. Madlaba, the Nakvamdis, and thank you for listening to The History of Sacramento, Georgia. See you next time.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East, the very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.